You're listening to episode 71 of the Mad Chatters podcast, February 3rd, 2016.
Most everyone's mad here.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World, and especially on this week's show, around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and joining me, as always, are my fellow chatters, Matt.
Howdy.
And Jeremy.
Hey, hey, hey.
As I kind of referred to on this week's show, we're going to be heading over to Disney California Adventure, which turns 15 years old this coming week. And we're going to do one of our Countdown to Parkstinction episodes and give a virtual tour of the park in its opening year. And we have a special guest joining us for that. But first, we're going to do a round of the Disney Fix.
The Disney Fix.
Now, we kind of make fun of this segment because it's basically a catch-all of anything Disney that doesn't really work for an entire episode, but that's really the only parameters for this segment. So, Jeremy, I'll turn it over to you. What you got?
Well, this week something caught my attention on the Twitterverse that I wanted to share. And every now and then a story will pop up and you look at it and you think, this has to be The Onion or a parody site. And apparently it is not. And so I'm just going to kind of give you the overall gist of the story, and you decide yourself. Apparently, and allegedly, according to these news sources, a family is threatening to sue Disney because they were visiting Disney's Animal Kingdom, and a family from Alabama. That's not important, just throwing it out there. A snake fell from a tree and bit the boy in the family. It does not say the boy's age in the article. Upon seeing the snake bite, the grandmother was so shocked and scared that she went into cardiac arrest and died.
She went into cardio.
She just started sweating the oldies right there. No, she went into cardiac arrest and died shortly thereafter. And so the family is suing for wrongful death. And also, I guess, blaming Disney because they claim that the snake was a part of the exhibits that escaped and got out. Now, yeah. Disney has come out and said this whole thing has been mischaracterized. The snake was not a part of any enclosure or any exhibit. It was a wild snake. It was a non-venomous snake, and the boy was treated at the park with a Band-Aid and was fine. But they're saying, you killed my grandmother, so we want some money.
Wow.
Like, $10, grandma was in a mechanized wheelchair.
What are you saying?
With an oxygen tank.
And... yes. She was already half gone. She shouldn't be at Disney World, no how.
Well, we're laughing a lot about such a tragedy.
It is a tragedy. Listen, I don't wish death upon anybody, but this has to be the most ridiculous thing. Because when I first saw the story, I saw family sues over snake bite, and I thought, oh, wow, you know, can you imagine? Even if it was a wild snake that bit a child and there was some damages, okay, you're still in a Disney park and there's probably an expectation of safety there. But to say the child got bit and was fine and just needed a Band-Aid, which – the article doesn't seem to refute that the family says that's all that happened to him, but they're saying grandma was so traumatized that she keeled over. That's like me saying I saw, you know, oh, Matt got, you know, he was scared on a roller coaster and him being afraid on Everest made me nervous and I fell over and died, you know.
Or like when that bird pooped on you, if I had just been so traumatized because of it.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to start playing the cause and effect game, where does it ever end?
Yeah, that's so funny because I saw a billion tweets about this and the very first time I knew it was the grandma was just now you telling that story. I had no idea.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not from the South, thank God. And but this family being from Alabama,
Stop. Just stop right there.
You're not helping your cause down there, Alabama. That's all I'm saying.
You're from Missouri.
We are the Midwest.
People say your name like Missouri. You don't get to comment on the South.
Only ignorant people in the South say Missouri.
Do we know how much longer after the bite that the grandma officially went into cardiac arrest?
The news articles I read from NBC and all these kind of things said it just says a short time later. So I don't know if that means later that night.
That might have been the churro grandma had for lunch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, churro? Probably more.
Churros.
Maybe it was shock from seeing Chester and Hester and saying, what is this doing here?
The cracks!
Anyway, that is for sure tragic. I know we laugh, but the suit is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, rest in peace.
You rid yourself of any, which I don't know, it's empathy, right? Or sympathy, depending on whether you've had a loved one die after a snake bite. Sympathy versus empathy. All that goes out the window when you turn around and try to sue them for causing it. It's like, no, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and let's be clear, the snake bite, the child is fine. He got a Band-Aid. He was okay. So
I will say, if a snake fell out of a tree and bit me, Animal Kingdom, I may be okay physically, but it would take me a little bit of time to start before I could walk under trees again, you know?
Yeah, I'd be a little shook up. I'd definitely probably have some free Sanaa that night because I'd go to guest services or whatever. But, you know, having a stroke or a heart
attack? Free Drinkwell, more like.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go next. We didn't really talk about this, even though it's been a few weeks now, but when they announced the Oscar nominations, Disney was up for 9 Oscars. So I was going to kind of talk about those and get your take. Only 4 projects were nominated, but there were 9 nominations overall. Cinderella was nominated for costume design. I'm glad it's getting some love because I thought that was a really excellent movie from 2015. Inside Out is nominated for original screenplay and then best animated feature. The short that came before The Good Dinosaur, which was called Sanjay's Super Team. Did either of you see this?
No.
Okay.
I have not seen The Good Dinosaur yet. I'm a bad Disney fan.
I know, we're bad. But it is nominated for Best Animated Short. And then Star Wars The Force Awakens holds the other 5 nominations for sound editing, sound mixing, visual effects, film editing, and original score. Now, the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I know I was a big fan of Inside Out, and I know people agreed with me. I know a lot of people considered it one of the better films of 2015. Now, I might be in the minority, but I think, A, it should have been nominated for original score, because this is some of Michael Giacchino's best work, in my opinion. I listen to that score all the time at work, and he's already won an Oscar for Up, and I think this is right up there with his score for Up. This is a little controversial, but I would have been totally okay if it had been nominated for Best Picture. Because you think Up was nominated for Best Picture and Toy Story 3 was, so it's not like it's that uncommon. Like, it wouldn't be that much of a shock. And when I think 2015, as far as, like, the, you know, handful of films that really defined this year, that was one of them. Especially since I've seen all 8 pictures nominated for Best Picture, and I could think of at least 4 that Inside Out was better than, but... Anyway, I didn't know if you guys had any thoughts on that whatsoever.
I agree with you. My only thing is I'm just trying to put myself into the mind of the Academy when they were going through these things. I'm just wondering if they thought, you know, these are like pretentious people mostly who select these things.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they just thought that maybe Inside Out was a little too cartoony for it to be. Because even like, okay, Toy Story 3 and Up, yes, there's a cartoon element there, but there's a very deep level.
There's a talking dog in Up.
All right, I'll give you that. Yeah, never mind. But there's deep themes, I guess, is what I'm saying. And there is an Inside Out as well, but I'm just picturing that they probably snickered at the fact that there wasn't too much depth as far as real world depth goes.
Maybe. Oh my gosh, I thought it was so deep.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just thinking in the minds of the Academy, you know? Like, oh, a little girl's brain. Oh, we don't have time for that.
Okay. I'm sure that's what they said. Anyway, I mean, obviously a lot of people disagree with me. I just wanted to put my 2 cents out there that I'm glad it got nominated for 2 different things, but I'm just shocked that its score was not nominated, especially since First of all, Sicario's score was nominated. I know that's not Disney, but if you listen to that, it's very forgettable. And Star Wars score was nominated, which of course John Williams is a genius, and we've talked about that before, but so many of the tracks in that film were just tracks that were reused from earlier Star Wars films. You know? Nah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it's not original to that film. I mean, some of them are, like Rey's theme I really like a lot.
I'm sure they were refreshed and replayed, not just reused.
Okay.
They probably weren't eligible, though, like the tracks that were reused. I'm pretty sure you can't.
Right, but those were the best tracks, in my opinion, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Oh, I like Snoke's theme.
Yeah. And Rey's is pretty good, too. Anyway, obviously, y'all don't really agree with me, or you don't care, so, Matt?
I don't care that much. I agree, it was a great score. In the lines of Oscars and controversy and race and feminism.
We weren't talking about that.
I know, but we were talking about the Oscars, which have been enveloped in that for at least 2 weeks now.
Yeah. It's called a transition, Derek. Look it up.
Mm. Yeah. From The Guardian this week, I don't see an author. I didn't see an author named on it, but the title of this article is Snow White and the Seven Lions. Has Disney Got a Princess Problem? And it's a very short little article, so I'm just going to read it, maybe a paragraph long. Female Disney characters routinely have fewer lines than males, even in films in which they are the lead. But at least their dolls now look a bit human. So here's how the article begins. Name, Disney princesses. Age, perpetually about 19. Appearance, silent and weird-looking. How can you say that? Every little girl wants to be a Disney princess, do they? Do they really want to grow up as a pretty afterthought on the sideline to everyone else's story? Oh, come on, what is Snow White if not the story of Snow White herself? The story of loads of men tasked with fixing an unconscious woman's problem. That's what? That's, in fact, according to research published by linguists Carmen Fott and Karen Eisenhower, female characters only had 50% of that film's dialogue. Gasp. Fine.
Exactly. Is that really in there?
Yes, it is. Fine.
The other 50% were male. Like, what's your
point? Yeah, exactly. I don't know. No clue. Fine. Bad example. What about Beauty and the Beast? Women only spoke 29% of the lines in that. And that's even if we take the unusual step of assigning a gender to that creepy singing teapot. It's Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, it is. Her name is Mrs. Potts.
Yeah, for real. Speaking off the record here, I just thought of it. Speaking of, like, gender discrimination, you're questioning the gender of Mrs. Potts, who's clearly voiced by Angela Lansbury, who is an older woman who has already gone through the change in life that reduces estrogen in the woman. So, yeah, pick on your gender, why don't you? In an article about picking on gender. Sorry her voice isn't as high and petite as yours, whoever you are. Back to the article. Little Mermaid? You mean the one where the ostensible protagonist is literally banned from talking for the majority of the film? Good point.
By her own bad choices.
This is true. But choices don't matter. Choices don't matter. And don't suggest Frozen next either. Even though you cannot remember a single male character from that film, false, they still outnumbered female characters 2-1. Oh, my word. Now, that I find ridiculous because there's two main male characters and there are two main female characters. And then you have Olaf and Sven. I mean, I guess they're males. So, whatever. Back to the article.
I do not believe that Olaf has genitalia. So I don't think we can make that conclusion.
His name is Olaf. Like,
what did I say?
I mean, you said Olaf, but I mean, that's pretty clear that it's a man.
You said it correctly. Okay, sorry. This is awful. Can something be done? Maybe. Production of the Disney Princess toy range has just shifted from Mattel to Hasbro, which wants to introduce a new realism in order to change how we think about princesses. Really? Sort of. Mattel's Disney princesses were notoriously Barbie-like, all elegant and gossamer, held in passive poses with their tiny heads resting on top of ridiculous necks. And now, they come in different heights and body types, and they're more distinct. The emphasis is apparently on what the princesses can do, rather than how they look. And what can they do? Hasbro seems especially keen on Tiana from The Princess and the Frog, mainly because she's apparently a great cook. Women like to cook, right? It's a step forward, I guess. What did these new Hasbro dolls sound like? Oh, they still don't talk. This is Disney, remember, not the National Young Feminist Leadership Conference. Do say, finally, my daughter can now better identify with these magical figures of entrenched privilege. Don't say, Mummy, look, Mulan's thighs scrape together when she walks, just like yours.
Oh, my word.
So let's just address this whole issue. I'm all for equal opportunity. And minorities and women and men, I guess just women, getting equal treatment, equal pay, equal opportunity, equal advantage. But it's just something very, very millennial about someone complaining about how many lines the female characters get, and especially the Snow White one.
Yeah.
They get 50% of the dialogue, and like we said, the other 50% is male, so that's equal, right? I'm missing the point here. All of that to say, it's just very ridiculous nitpicking. In our generation where everybody's a winner, everyone should be treated equally in sense of they get as much airtime, you know. Mm-hmm. Everyone should have the exact same opportunities and privileges, no matter what they've availed themselves to. You know, just like we said with Ariel. Ariel got herself into her own predicament.
Right.
You know, and even in that, you've got the powerful female villain, Ursula. We magically left her off the list, though. We didn't want to talk about how, you know, she was. So I just find this ridiculous. Go grow up and grow a set.
And when you're talking about gender equality, is it really fair to use a reference from 1937?
No.
You know, like, we're not still producing movies like that.
No. It's just this whole mindset. Nobody wants sympathy and empathy anymore because it makes them weak. So we can't feel sorry for, you know, someone. Somehow that makes females weak because we were sad for Snow White and happy when she was woken up. I guess we should have just left her dead. That's fine. Let her die.
That would have made that movie so much better. Send me that link after the show and I'll put it in the show notes in case our listeners want to check that out.
Okay.
Good stuff. But now let's do another round of Disney hashtags. I enjoyed this the last time we did it when we did Add a Word, Ruin an Attraction. Lots of fun. Lots of response on Twitter as well. So maybe next week we'll do this one online as well and see if some of the other listeners want to get in on the action. But for this week, our hashtag is Edible Disney Songs. We're changing words, adding words, removing words, whatever it takes to make classic Disney songs edible. Who wants to go first?
I'll start.
Okay, go.
You ain't never had a friend like meat.
A Whole Foods New World.
Mmm. The Taco Bells of Notre Dame.
I've got no string cheese.
I had that one too. I put that.
Once Upon a Dreamsicle Pop.
Mmm. This is harsh. The Three Roasted Caballeros.
Okay.
Sorry.
Hi ho hoes.
Fro yo, the pirate's life for me.
Mmm. Kiss the Girl Scout Cookies.
Do you wanna build a snow cone?
Ooh, nice.
Reindeer taste better than people.
The second Starbucks to the right.
Under the seaweed salad.
Ew.
I'll make a manicotti out of you.
Nice. I said, I'll make a manwich out of you.
Oh, I said that one too. That's a great one. How about poor unfortunate soul?
What?
Spelled S-O-L-E.
I still don't get it.
As in the fish. It's a fish.
Oh, that's a fish? Oh. Yeah. I was like, why are you eating your feet?
I was waiting for the joke. And
watch Food Network every once in a while.
I just have one more, but it's kind of, Derek already kind of said it, but I'll say it anyways. When You Wish Upon a Starbucks.
Oh, my play on When You Wish Upon a Star is When You Wish Upon a Star Crunch.
Ooh, yeah. Our friends in the South will like this one. Collards of the Wind.
My last one is Cruella Deviled Eggs.
Nice. Okay, from Parent Trap, Let's Get Brunch Together. And from Mary Poppins, A Spoonful of Sugar Babies. And finally, Hakuna Matartar Sauce.
That sounds like something that should be at a Disney resort.
Oh, yeah. That is a DCA 1.0 menu item right there.
I'll have the poor unfortunate soul with the Hakuna Matartar Sauce.
Or Feed Me the Birds. Well, Feed Me the Birds.
That's good.
It's time once again to hop in our time rovers, punch in the coordinates, and travel back in time. This trip, however, will be shorter than any trip we've taken so far on this podcast. We're traveling back just 15 years to the beginning of 2001, when George W. Bush had just taken office. Shaggy's It Wasn't Me was at the top of the Billboard charts. And when something very exciting was happening over at Disneyland, the resort was finally getting a second park as promised. And on February 8th was held the grand opening of Disney's California Adventure.
Time travelers, place all loose items in the pouch in front of you, fasten your seatbelt, and remain seated with your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the time rover. And please watch children. Time travel commencing in T-minus 10 seconds and counting.
That was the whitest introduction of Shaggy's song I've ever heard.
It wasn't me. Now, Jeremy and I have been to DCA a few times in the past couple of years and have discussed it ad nauseum on this show. But none of the three of us were actually there to experience it in its earliest days, or as it's come to be known, DCA 1.0. So we thought we'd bring on someone to help us fill in the gaps who was there, and that is Guy Selga. Hey, Guy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so excited that you're here, because this park seems to have maybe had more growing pains than any other park in Disney history. And so we've heard the stories, but now we want to hear it straight from someone who was there. So if you've heard these segments before, you know we just kind of give a virtual tour of the park in that year. And like I said, we're in 2001. So I think we should... Let's start with like some generics first. Do you remember kind of what the feeling was as this park was set to be open? Like Disneyland was getting a second gate and it had been open for, you know, 5 decades at this point.
Yeah. So it's kind of started off in, you know, the early 90s, even with Westcott being talked about in the local newspapers, and then Port Disney in Long Beach. And I remember all the local newspapers, especially the one in my town, Long Beach, called the Long Beach Press-Telegram, covering both those expansions quite a bit, especially since there was a lot of debate with the Anaheim and Long Beach residents and the coastal commissions and all this other like bureaucratic red tape they had to go through. But then once it got into the late 90s and we found out it was going to be DCA, they opened up a little preview center in the Opera House on Main Street, and they had concept art up, and they were actually selling DCA merchandise with that old ugly logo with the bear on it. And then when construction started, the parking lot was cleared, so you couldn't park in front of Disneyland anymore. Parking became, you know, a little bit harder. They did add a little platform kind of off to the left near where Monsters, Inc. is now. They added a little platform you could climb up on and just kind of check out the construction. So the hype was building, but I think as it got closer to opening and you heard kind of the rumors of what the park was going to be like, And the hype was turned into kind of like worry.
Yeah.
Especially from the people in the know. Because I remember like Al Lutz, that was really his rise to power from Mice Age. I think he was still writing for Mouse Planet, I think, back then. But he was really like doom and gloom about the whole thing, talking about how the old time Imagineers that saw the project weren't into it and didn't like it. And they had some tense meetings with kind of the new Imagineers. So people's expectations were getting lowered by the day back then.
Okay, that answers one of my questions, because I knew, you know, the first couple of years were rough for this park, and, you know, guests weren't exactly thrilled. And I didn't know if it was after those first few months of reviews or even before it opened. So that's very interesting. Not good for a park that has not yet opened.
Yeah. And you know, even back then, when you would just look at the map of the park, there's just nothing there. Mm-hmm. There's hardly anything. And I remember one specific line that Disney kept saying back then was that it's DCA is going to have as many rides as Disneyland did when it opened. As many rides as did when it opened. But it's like, that was in 1955.
That was 46 years ago.
So just stuff like that was like, oh, what are we getting into here?
Yeah.
Do you think it was just the overall theme of like just being California central that turned people off as well, that there wasn't a lot of, Disney magic associated with it?
Yeah, I think that the theme, and then just Westcott and Port Disney being kind of hyped up so much for almost 10 years, and then getting what we got really kind of disappointed people.
Westcott, of course, being sort of a Western version of, or West Coast version of Epcot, correct?
Right.
And then
right.
What was the other one that you mentioned?
Port Disney was a resort that they were going to build in Long Beach, and it was going to have what we now know as Disney Sea in Tokyo, something very similar to that. And then a bunch of hotels, because, you know, that was the whole Eisner thing, like, let's build 7 hotels for one theme park. And I think Port Disney had that many hotels. It was going to have the West Coast Disney home cruise terminal, stuff like that.
Mm. All right. Well, let's go ahead and step into the park. Now, before you even step into the park, there were these giant letters that I've seen pictures of so many times that spelled out California, which kind of, before you even enter the park, established the theme of what you were about to step into.
Right. And it the whole effect was supposed to be like you're stepping into a postcard. And it actually kind of worked when you would be entering DCA from Disneyland. But, you know, usually you're entering from the far right from Downtown Disney. So you're kind of seeing this weird off shift thing that doesn't look quite right. But even ignoring all this stuff behind it, the California letters were actually pretty popular, and they're still surprisingly fondly remembered. Disney donated them to, I forget what it's called, but it's somewhere up in Northern California, some like Fairplex. So the California letters are there. So if you want to go to Northern California, you can take a picture with them.
How long did they stay around?
They stayed around until the construction was really getting into full swing for Buena Vista Street. So what was that, 2007?
So I guess they felt that they just didn't really fit with the new entrance, because they redid the whole signage on the entrance, right?
Right. Yeah, they built a new entrance and they pushed it out a bit more. So where the California letters were are where kind of the new entrance is now.
Ah, I see.
Okay. Now, you can help me out or correct me if I'm wrong about some of these things, but I remember when I don't remember this because I wasn't alive, but when Pirates of the Caribbean was not built at Walt Disney World because we were too close to the Caribbean here in Florida or something like that, and they didn't want to. They thought that people would wouldn't enjoy an attraction that was so close to home or something like that. It seems like the exact opposite was taking place here. So all these original lands and attractions, and even the lettering, and here's the goal. How far is Anaheim away from San Francisco?
I think it's about an 8 or 9 hour drive.
Oh, that's pretty far away. So I'm thinking, like, when you go to World Showcase at Epcot, you have miniature versions of, you know, the Eiffel Tower and all the different facades from around the world, and St. Mark's Square from Italy and all these things. When you go here, you're in California, but we're going to make a cheaper, smaller version of all the things you can see while you're in California. So it seems like the exact opposite. While you're here in this theme park, see all these miniature cheap versions of California.
It's a weird choice, especially back then in the 2000s, when the Disneyland Resort visitors were mostly locals. You know, that was when an annual pass cost, I think, $350, $400, something really cheap. You know, unlike now where the out-of-town visitors versus locals have kind of evened out. But, you know, back then it was overwhelming majority local visitors visiting a theme park about the state they live in.
Hmm. Yeah, that might have contributed to some of it. Plus just the complete lack of imagination, it seems.
Yeah.
But, yeah, let's continue into Sunshine Plaza. Wow.
Yeah, the thing about Sunshine Plaza was it was really flat because you had these, you know, they were pretty nice looking tile mosaic murals on the sides, but there was no real depth or texture there. It was just these nice looking flat murals that led into a miniature Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, that's right. I assume you could see the Golden Gate Bridge from outside the entrance, right? Like it looked pretty big.
Yeah, you could see it. Yeah.
Okay. And then it's so funny about Sunshine Plaza because as I think about Buena Vista Street, which has now kind of replaced it, like Buena Vista Street is very much a destination. You know, you have the trolley and Five and Dime perform there for you to listen to and the Starbucks there. And I felt just looking at a map, I wasn't there, but Sunshine Plaza feels just like a starting point to go somewhere else. You know, like it's a pathway to get to the real destination.
Right, and there was no point in spending any time there.
In the original iteration of I guess it's the only iteration of Sunshine Plaza now that it's Buena Vista Street, but was there any kinetic energy going on there? Because, you know, that's usually the thing with Main Street, Hollywood Boulevard. You know, there's fountains and all these things at Epcot, and obviously the Animal Kingdom, all the stuff leading up to the Tree of Life. When you said it was flat, I'm wondering, was there any transportation, any draw to that area, or was it just like a boring entrance plaza?
It was pretty boring. Every 10 minutes or so, you'd see the monorail kind of go by, but it goes by so quick. It's such a small gap that you don't really, it doesn't really have any impact. The further into Sunshine Plaza, you would see the Sun Sphere. It's not the Sun Sphere. What is it? The Sun.
The Golden Sun?
Yeah, the Golden Sun thing. The giant golden hubcap sun.
Yeah.
Underneath that, there was a fountain with kind of like a little wave machine in it. So that was really the only movement you got. But there was nothing drawing you in, and there was no real reason to go closer to the sun because it was just this big, ugly, golden thing.
Yeah, I'm curious, in the first merchandise for this park, was that sun the icon or was it Grizzly Peak?
It was usually Grizzly Peak.
Okay.
It kind of had those curved up California letters with the giant bear on top of it.
Hmm. Yeah. We were just talking about this a few weeks, how Hollywood Tower, the Hollywood Tower Hotel has kind of become the icon for Hollywood Studios. And it's the only one that's not really centered as you walk into the park. But really, Grizzly Peak, I guess, was the first one to do that.
Yeah, you know, that's weird that you bring that up. Grizzly Peak wasn't centered, and then after the first couple of years, I remember the trees around it really grew to the point where through most areas of the park, you couldn't even see it because the trees were covering it. And I remember they didn't even cut the trees until Cars Land opened, and now they're starting to grow back again to where you can't see Grizzly Peak.
Hmm. And yet it's still used as the icon. I know that Mickey's Fun Wheel is used a lot as well, but I see Grizzly Peak still a lot.
Interesting fact, completely aside and tangential from this, is that the one of the T-shirts for Walt Disney World now that features the four park icons, it's a 2016 shirt, brand new, and it's very plain, hipster-looking. It has, of course, the castle, Spaceship Earth, Tree of Life, and underneath those three, it has the opening dates of the park. And the fourth one, they have Hollywood, the Tower of Terror on there, and it says 1994 underneath it, like that's when MGM opened or something, completely aside once again, but just very strange that that's chosen. And they put the date with it, like that's when the park opened.
That is very weird.
Sorry.
It's okay. One thing I noticed when looking at the map that made me laugh, and it's definitely a theme of this early park, were the puns that were where they were featured. And I found the first one in Sunshine Plaza, and that was Burbank ice cream, but it's BUR-R-R bank.
Oh, yeah.
Ice cream.
No, yeah. I can't handle it.
Oh, the fun has only begun, Jeremy, with these puns. It's pretty bad. Well, I think that's pretty much it for Sunshine Plaza. Let's go to the left to Hollywood Pictures backlot now. Hollywood land and talk about some of the stuff that was there.
Yeah, so back, you know, when DCA opened, Hollywood Pictures backlot was a dead end. There was no connection to any other part of the park. So you'd walk in, and it's actually pretty similar to what it is now. You kind of have the street, and then you would see the fake sky in the background where Hyperion Theater is, and that is pretty much unchanged.
Mm-hmm.
They took down the golden elephants at the entrance, and of course they renamed the land to Hollywood Land. But let's see. What do you want to talk about first in Hollywood?
I want to talk about Superstar Limo.
Yes, that's what I want to talk about too. Because
this is an enigma upon an enigma wrapped around an enigma.
Yeah, it's as bad as you've heard.
Kind of explain it for our listeners who don't know.
So Superstar Limo was DCA's only dark ride when the park opened. You ride in these limos that hold six people, and you're running from the paparazzi. And so all throughout the ride, there's paparazzi popping out, taking fake pictures of you. But you also see these nightmarish versions of B and C list celebrities, animatronic versions of them. So like Cindy Crawford and who else? Regis Philbin, Jackie Chan, Drew Carey, most of them have been reused as characters in Monsters, Inc., the current ride that is there, which I think is really funny.
Wait, were these like caricatured versions or like looking animatronics?
No, they were like little chibi versions.
Okay.
And they were just kind of weird, off-proportioned. I remember the Cindy Crawford one stood out in a lot of reviews, like even non-Disney reviews, in the mainstream media, on how bizarre it looked. So yeah, it was just not a good ride. It was very strange. And you know what's funny about Superstar Limo is I remember reading in the Long Beach Press Telegram very, very early on in DCA's, when they were still planning it out, this was going to be what we now know as Rock and Roller Coaster. It was going to, and the entrance was going to look like LAX, and it was going to have a version of the themed building. I don't know if you know what that is, that weird looking building outside of LAX. And it was going to be a roller coaster where you're in a super stretch limo escaping from the paparazzi. But then what we ended up getting was this strange dark ride that closed, I think, less than a year after the park opened.
It feels the same. It feels the same as Rock and Roller Coaster.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny that you say that is because when I read about this, I went to Disneyland back in 95, and I had the Burn Bombs official guide, and they were talking about the upcoming things for California Adventure. And later on, when they announced that Superstar Limo was going to be an attraction, I just assumed it was going to be Rock and Roller Coaster minus any kind of sponsorship or Aerosmith tie-ins. But I honestly had no idea what it was till maybe this past year, looking up some of the original attractions at DCA. It does sound very bizarre.
Yeah, it's very strange, and if you haven't seen it, you have to go on YouTube and look up a video. It's really amazing.
Thank God for YouTube.
And you know what's crazy about this ride is they had a full merchandise line for it. They had toys, T-shirts, picture frames, mugs, stickers, everything you can imagine.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because Disney fans love dark rides, but we love good dark rides.
Well, even looking at the entrance facade, the original entrance facade, it just looks like something at a county fair.
Yeah, it was, and again, we go back to how flat some of the things were. It was just kind of flat, cardboard-looking cutouts of the Hollywood Hills, Hollywood sign, other landmarks like Union Station and stuff like that, the City Hall. But it just didn't work, didn't look good. Nothing about that ride was good.
I just can't believe somebody didn't think this was a bad idea as far as... This is 2001, 1997, Princess Diana dies in a horrible car accident, running from the paparazzi. Hey, that sounds like family fun for the park. Yeah. Let's do that.
And this was apparently Michael Eisner's favorite ride in the whole park.
That doesn't surprise me, but anyways.
I bet it was.
Now, when it became Monsters, Inc., was that part of the big overhaul that started in 2007, or was that even earlier?
That was even earlier, because I remember the... Superstar Limo sat closed with nothing going on for quite a while, quite a number of years. So that's like they thought that DCA was better off with a ride closed with no replacement. Like that's how like guest satisfaction ratings went up when this ride closed. That's how bad it was.
Wow.
Oh my. It was only open a year, right? Less than a year.
Yeah, it was not a long period of time. I think it might even be in the top. It's definitely in the top 10. It might be in the top 5 of shortest lived Disneyland resort attractions overall.
Wow. Improve it by elimination.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had Muppet Vision 3D. That was opening day, right?
Yeah, opening day. Yeah.
Okay, and that's still there. Well, actually, it's not really.
Not really. I mean, it might come back. The Frozen sing-along thing is there now.
That's right.
And if you ask Disneyland today on Twitter, they'll tell you there's no current plans to bring it back, but I guess it's just in limbo.
That Frozen thing feels very temporary to me.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird that they want to keep that around when the Frozen musical is opening up down the street.
Yeah, right next door, basically.
The Hyperion, so.
Speaking of the Hyperion, what was there in that opening year?
You know, I always get these mixed up, but there were a few early shows in it. There was The Power of Blast, which I think was based on an actual musical called Blast, but it was like a shortened version. And then there was something else called Steps in Time. I want to say the park opened with Steps in Time.
That's the one I've heard of.
Yeah, so Steps in Time opened with the park. It was very poorly reviewed, and then it closed almost immediately, and it got retooled. And then that lasted less than a year, and then Power of Blast opened. And then in 2006, 2003, Aladdin opened.
Which is funny because that theater is huge.
Yeah, it's massive.
So it's almost like if I were looking at this park, I would think, oh, they clearly have something really great planned for that theater because it seats, I don't know, thousands?
Yeah, and you know, that theater is so weird because early in the plans, there had always been the idea to put a huge theater in DCA and have it to where they could have it to host like movie premieres and corporate parties and whatever. And I remember at one point they were talking about how they wanted an entrance to it available from outside the park. But it just kept getting scaled back and scaled back to what it eventually is now, where there's no lobby.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah. And the queue is all outside, exposed to the elements.
Well, of course, Aladdin just closed earlier this year, so Frozen can make its way. But Aladdin stayed for a good long time, over a decade.
Yeah, it had a huge long run.
Yeah.
Was the Step in Time show, was that Mary Poppins themed, or was it just a dance?
It was a Disney, like a Disney variety show kind of thing.
Okay.
That sounds terrible.
It's amazing to me that Tower of Terror wasn't in the original plans for a land dedicated to Hollywood. I feel like you have this huge attraction in Disney World that fans have come to love, and it's been open long enough to where I feel like it wouldn't be that hard to recreate. And obviously it's not because they built it a few years later, but I'm just amazed that wasn't part of the original plans.
Yeah, it's amazing. And and you could tell that they rushed Tower of Terror because the rumor is that it's built on an expansion pad, but it's built near the front of the expansion pad. So the back of it is kind of like inaccessible. You know what I mean? Like they just kind of slapped it there. Like I've heard through people that the Tower of Terror that DCA got is just a carbon copy of what they were building in Paris, the Disney Studios Paris.
Does Disney Studios in Paris have a Hollywood Tower of Terror? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Because talk about parks that are made fun of.
And is still bad. They haven't gotten their big $1 billion makeover, and they probably never will.
Yeah. Well, okay, I have a question about the animation building, because I'm actually a fan of this building. When you walk in, I think there's a lot to take in visually. What was it like in those opening years?
It was pretty much exactly the same. It was one of the highlights of DCA for sure. The only thing that the biggest addition would be Turtle Talk with Crush. The area called Character Close Up, it's where Anna and Elsa meet now. That was like previews for upcoming Disney movies, Disney animated movies. But then it kind of, over the years, they kind of scaled it back into just like a generic look at the Toy Story zoetrope. But yeah, the Animation Academy is still there, very popular, especially with locals. You know, every half hour they have a different character that the instructor teaches you to draw. I think that theater fits like 100 people, and there's usually lines for it every day.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You want to talk about the restaurants of Hollywood Pictures backlot?
Sure. Let's do it.
So this one I actually kind of miss. It was the Hollywood and Dine building, tucked back into the corner. And inside, it had several different restaurants inside. So it was all quick service. And there was actually surprisingly good food. I remember especially getting like some kind of Panda Express level of quality, like Chinese food in there and some good sandwiches and stuff. The only problem was that it was in a completely dead corner of the park. So it closed so early on.
Are we talking back by Superstar Limo corner?
Yeah. Between Hyperion Theater and Superstar Limo.
Oh, yeah. Not good.
Yeah, just a totally dead corner of the park.
Is that all kind of where Mad Tea Party is now, that area?
Yeah, it's where Mad Tea Party is now. And that the building where Hollywood and Dine used to be, they used it for Flynn's Arcade when Electronica was going on.
Okay.
And then during the first Mad Tea Party, they used it for the Cheshire Cat's Arcade, I think they called it. And now it's just nothing. It's just closed.
And now you go behind it, and I think you can meet Daisy there for your Disney Visa card meet and greet or whatever.
Yeah, near the water tower, which nobody knows is there.
Oh, that's right. I forget that's there, yeah. Okay, Award Wieners, that's still around today.
Still around, yeah.
That's a winner. And Schmoozy's.
Schmoozy's is still around. They lost its weird-looking mascot. It was like a purple cup with stars for eyes. It was very, very DCA 1.0. That came down with when they went through their revamp in 2008.
But Hollywood and Dine was your favorite of this.
Yeah, just because of the variety. And, you know, back then, Disneyland food was not great. It was before they really went and revamped everything. So, yeah, they actually had good food there. It just was never open because the park was dead.
What about the ABC Soap Opera Bistro? Because the guide map says getting in on the act of one of TV's hottest soaps is part of the menu. What does that mean?
Okay, this is one of my greatest regrets, is not eating at Soap Opera Bistro. So inside the bistro, they had sets recreated from various ABC soap operas. And then your waiter was like a cast member from those soaps. So, you know, you may sit in the general hospital area, and then your waiter is a doctor, and then another waiter is a nurse, and they argue or have dramatic scene. And I've only seen pictures. I don't even know if there's video of it, but yeah, I regret not eating there. I just remember it being super expensive.
That sounds like the greatest, worst thing ever. Like, I want that so bad.
That should replace ABC Commissary at Hollywood.
Oh, yes. My goodness.
Totally. I'm picturing like Grey's Anatomy scenes and Scandal scenes. It might not pass health code, though.
So. They couldn't show the Grey's Anatomy scene. They just have to go into a closet.
I remember Disney sites back when it was open. They would talk about how nobody ever went there. It was completely dead all the time, except for when DCA had their soap opera weekends, which it was like officially sanctioned Disney weekend where they would have like all the soap opera actors come out, and then fans could come and meet them and buy merchandise and stuff. And then Soap Opera Bistro was hugely popular and impossible to get into.
That's awesome. I wonder, do people cosplay for that as well? It's like Star Wars weekends. Like, I'm Chanel from Days of Our Lives.
Is that a real person?
No, I made it up.
I bet. Well, I wouldn't put it past you, but, you know.
He's got to watch his show.
Stories.
That's it. Stories.
Moving on.
Okay, I have a question about some of the lands, because I was going to say, well, let's go back to the other side, to Condor Flats. But, like, the map shows Condor Flats as a small part of the giant land called Golden State.
Right.
That's very confusing to me.
Yeah, and Disney is kind of finally rectifying that now, where they've made it its actual own land and gave it its own name and all that, with Grizzly Peak Airfield.
Yeah.
But yeah, back then it was just part of Grizzly Peak, which had, three or four mini lands inside.
Yeah.
And now it's actually its own land.
Because Pacific Wharf is also included in Golden State, which is on the other side of, you know, Grizzly River Run.
Yeah, that's weird.
Anyway. Okay, well, let's start with Condor Flats, because I don't think a whole lot has changed there other than, like, the general theme.
Yeah, they changed the theme, but all the buildings are still the same. Taste Pilot's Grill changed its name to Smoke Jumper's Grill. But, yeah, Soarin' is still there. Just the building is painted green now, and at some point this year they'll get Soarin' over the world, and Soarin' over California will be extinct.
It seems old news now, but I guess really this Soarin' was a very big deal for Disney, because it's the reason we eventually got it in Epcot, and it's still one of the most popular attractions there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's safe to say it's way more popular in Epcot than it is in DCA.
I would agree. It's hard to know if it's because of, like, the attractions that compete with it, but
right,
it definitely
right.
has longer lines out here.
Yeah, and, you know, back when DCA opened, Soarin' was really the only thing with the wait. That and California Screamin'. There was really nothing else like it in the entire park.
That's true. Okay, and if you keep going around that pathway, you get to Grizzly River Run, which, man, looking at this map, it takes up a good fourth of the park.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of room, and this was back when it had kind of an extreme sports theme, so there would be, like, rock and roll music playing in the queue, and there'd be a bunch of neon-colored kayaks and, you know, life vests everywhere. It was very extreme.
Wow. Well, what is it now? Is it more outdoorsy, woodsy themed?
Yeah, they took away all the neon stuff and gave it kind of a rustic look, went over everything and kind of weathered it. So
that sounds nice.
I love this area of the park, yeah.
More like a national park kind of feel.
Well, right, when I was reading about this attraction, I've never been to DCA because I didn't get to go with these two gentlemen on their two lavish vacations there. And the last time I went was before it opened, but I was excited about this because it looked like a really it looks highly detailed and highly themed, but there's not like any necessary story to it. Certainly no animatronics or scenes throughout the ride, are there?
No, there still isn't. And you know, the thing about Grizzly River Run, it's a fun ride, but the way the ride vehicle is, you're in a giant raft that's circular and you're constantly moving. So anything in the ride that is nice, you're moving by so fast and you're spinning that it's so easy to miss anything there. I can kind of see why they didn't put animatronics in it.
Yeah. Have you seen, of course that makes sense, but have you seen video or have any of you seen video of the, I don't even know what it's called. It's the big mine train roller coaster attraction at Hong Kong Disneyland.
Oh, Grizzly something,
Peak?
But yeah.
It might be Grizzly. That's this thing. I don't know. It's something like that. It's kind of like a cross between Everest and Big Thunder Mountain and lots of other things put together.
It's either the Grizzly Gulch or Big Grizzly Mountain Runaway Mine Cars.
That I'll give you two guesses.
Well, yeah, I think Grizzly Gulch is the land, so it's the runaway mine car or whatever.
Well,
but yeah, there's a ton of bear animatronics in that.
Yeah, and they're like little you know, nice cartoony, they're scratching their backs on something or they're, you know, they're the ones wreaking havoc for the ride. I think that would be nice here, but you said it is enjoyable. How is it longer than Cali River Rapids here at Animal Kingdom?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit longer. I don't think it's any significant amount longer though. It's still a pretty quick ride.
Okay.
But you can walk all the way around it. So like, even if you can't necessarily enjoy the landscapes while riding it, it does create some really cool landscapes, like walking on certain bridges and around the edges of it.
Yeah. I think it looks great still. Yeah,
it really does. Okay. Now let's get to Bountiful Valley Farm.
Oh man.
Okay. I assume this is supposed to pay homage to, you know, Napa Valley and the wineries of California. I'm kind of confused what it's doing in a theme park though.
Yeah, so on the right you had the winery, which had actual vineyards. Well, still has actual vineyards in it. But interesting fact about that, in Anaheim the soil has a grape disease to where it can't grow grapes for long periods of time. I don't know what the amount is, 5 years let's just say. So every 5 or 6 years, they have to go through and replant all the vines because Anaheim has this grape disease. Isn't that insane?
That's really weird.
So also in the winery, they had the restaurant Golden Vine Trattoria. I always butcher that pronunciation. Golden Vine Trattoria, whatever, was sponsored by Mondavi Vineyards. That was one of the sponsorships that the park lost very early on, kind of like the what's his name? Wolfgang Puck, Avalon Cove.
Yeah, which is a Cove Bar now, right?
Yeah, well, Cove, which is now also Ariel's Grotto.
Oh, I see.
But so both those, once they realized the park was a flop, pulled out their sponsorship early on, like within less than a year. Going back to Bountiful Valley Farm, though. You could do things like climb up inside a tractor. And
that sounds
and
like
that's about it.
Worth the price of admission.
Yeah, they did have It's Tough to Be a Bug.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And that is still there, even though through most of the year it is closed for some sort of movie preview. Mm-hmm. Right now it's closed for the Zootopia preview.
And I bet you in that area it really was tough to be a bug because they probably had a lot of pesticides and things to keep the grapes growing.
Wow. Exactly. One good thing about Bountiful Valley Farm was it had a place called Sam Andreas Shakes. And the shakes were really good. They had a blueberry pie shake, and it was like blueberry ice cream with pie crust sprinkled on top, and I really missed that.
Oh, that sounds good.
I love my Disney food.
Mm-hmm. Yep. When we went on our last trip, someone had three mud pies from Flo's.
I have a hard time with self-control, wasn't I said? In many areas.
Now, what's the sort of lounge that's still there? That's kind of, you have to go upstairs.
Oh, right. So they had a little theater near the Vineyard playing Seasons of the Vine, which I think they still show during Food and Wine Expo at Epcot, right?
Ooh, I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, you could be right. I don't know.
Yeah, well, so they had a little theater showing that. And then now in that place is the Disney Imagineering Blue Sky Cellar, which also hasn't been open in like 3 or 4 years now. That was where they had all the Cars Land concept art and stuff like that. And then upstairs they have the Alfresco Lounge.
That's it.
Which is one of the hidden gems of all of Disneyland Resort. Delicious food and a bunch of drinks and a nice view of Cars Land. And it's a really great place. Pretty cheap too. But not a lot going on in Bountiful Valley Farm.
Okay, so that little lounge was one way to like keep this theme around, but it's certainly not as extensive as it was then, right?
Yeah, the farm is pretty much completely gone. Right now, Bugs Land is there.
Yeah.
Which is great for kids and nobody else really.
Yeah, we don't spend a lot of time in Bugs Land.
And and you can't climb in the tractor anymore?
No, the tractor's long gone.
What
unfortunately.
A shame.
Yeah. It is a shame. Yeah. Okay, well, let's go through Pacific Wharf then.
Pacific Wharf, the land of restaurants?
Basically, yeah.
Let's see. Back then, they had the tortilla tour, where you could go through and watch them making mission tortillas. Oh. And then they would give you a tortilla at the end. And if it was your birthday, they would give you a whole packet of tortillas.
Ooh. What are you going to do with those?
This sounds like the highlight of the park so far.
Yeah. So that got replaced by Ghirardelli a few years back. Across from that is the bread tour.
Yes, yes, yes.
Where you can walk through and watch Disney cast members making bread. And then you get a free piece of bread, which is good. Bread is good.
Was this hosted by Rosie O'Donnell and Colin Mochrie at opening time as well?
Yes, it still is. They still play the exact same video. So if you want to get a taste of DCA 1.0, just go in the bread tour.
I found the video to be kind of charming, if you want to know the truth, though.
It's bad.
Yeah, in its own little Disney way. I like it. I'm glad it stuck around.
Yeah.
Well, just last year, they even took steps to revamp this a little bit, right? They added that car out front.
Yeah, it got a little it got a little love. And they added seating in there, too, so you can sit and have
a
meal.
Sounds like a Disney-fied Sam's over there. You just watch people make things and you get a free sample.
That's exactly what it is, Matt. Yeah, as I'm looking at this map of restaurants, a lot of them are still there today, like Cucina Cucamonga, Pacific Wharf Cafe, Lucky Fortune Cookery. All of these things were there opening year.
Yeah, and really the only difference is Lucky Fortune and Cucina Cucamonga switched places because Cucina Cucamonga ended up being more popular, but Lucky Fortune had the bigger kitchen, so they switched places.
Okay. I mean, it is a good spot to get food. I don't know why you would change it.
And even the area in general got, it just added a nice layer of texture, did some repainting, and now it looks actually pretty good. It makes sense. It looks like it fits.
Yeah, I like being able to sit on some of those tables on the water while you're eating.
Yeah, definitely.
Adds a nice touch. Okay, well, let's get into Paradise Pier. When I think, when I was younger and it was about the time that this park was opening and we would see commercials out here for it, everything I remember comes back to California Screamin' with the big Mickey ears on it. Like, this was in every single commercial I ever saw, and it's what I thought of when I thought of the West Coast Disney parks.
Yeah, they definitely hammered that home in all the marketing. And the giant Ferris wheel that was called the Sun Wheel back then, now it's called Mickey's Fun Wheel. That was like the culmination of Michael Eisner's obsession with Ferris wheels. It was in the plans for Port Disney. It was in the plans for Disney's America. And then he finally got it in DCA. He finally got his giant Ferris wheel.
Oh, Eisner.
Praise the Lord. This whole thing here, I remember when this park opened and being a Disney fan back in the early 2000s and before, I was anxiously anticipating what this park was going to be. And just looking through that, like I told you, I had the unofficial guide, or the official guide. I bought it every year for both coasts until like 5 years ago. And reading through the attractions for Paradise, what is called Paradise Pier, I was like, that's just what I have at Carowinds. It's got swings, Carowinds being a little dumpy Cedar Fair park over in North Carolina where I was then. It's got like the drop zone thing, no theme. I mean, it's minimal theming.
Yeah,
but, a roller coaster, a Ferris wheel.
It's like a miniature Knott's Berry Farm, which is 10 minutes away from Disneyland.
Exactly, yeah, and I got I get the theme. You know, they're going for that dockside amusement park, not in Coney Island on a different coast kind of feel. It's just nobody, I don't think anybody cares about that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, the idea makes a lot of sense because, you know, California had all of the piers, the actual piers with theme parks on them, like the Pike in Long Beach and whatever else, but just the execution was not there.
Well,
tell me, okay, well, let's talk about the attractions first, because you got California Screamin', which is still there. The Mickey ears are gone. Do you know, did they ever talk about why they did that?
I don't think I've heard any official reasons, but I just assume that it just doesn't match with, you know, the current look that they're trying to go for,
I guess. And maybe it'd be redundant to have him there and on the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is the Malibumer still open?
No, Malibumer is gone. They took that down when they were doing all the refurbishment to that area. That was another thing where they thought the park was better without it, which is amazing.
Yeah, see, that was another question I had. Why would they tear that down? Because as far as I remember, it's just like a little courtyard.
Well, so the reason I heard is that they wanted to tear it down when they did. So when they do build something there, they didn't have to take the deconstruction cost out of the budget for the new ride.
Okay. Because there's really nothing there now other than like places like to sit.
Yeah, there's some benches which were already there. I mean, like, you can go in there and the platform is still there where the tower used to be. Oh. You can ride Screamin' and still look down and see literally bolts and holes where the poles used to be.
Do people really enjoy California Screamin'? I mean, is it like a big draw?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a draw. It's one of the most popular rides after, you know, Toy Story, Soarin', Radiator Springs Racers. Yeah. It's not quite on that level, but it's definitely popular, and it has huge hourly capacity.
It's one of those things that I always just looked at and thought, that is not a Disney ride.
Yeah, yeah.
It is just
That was the whole thing about this park. They were trying to be hip and edgy and appeal to a younger crowd, and, you know, that's why there was so much booze and so many restaurants and very few rides. They thought people are going to come in and ride the roller coaster, get some wine, and have an expensive dinner.
I enjoy it. When you go to a park like Disney and you ride all these, or hypothetically, these really detailed attractions that were really thought out, it's just kind of nice to get on a good old-fashioned roller coaster. And it eats people like crazy, so I think that's one of the things it's got going for it.
Yeah, that's a fun ride, and the launch is really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Has it always been hosted by Neil Patrick Harris, or was that
no. That's a recent thing. They've just some generic carnival barker guy before.
Yeah, he's all over Paradise Pier nowadays. What with World of Color and. Okay, so they added Mickey to the Ferris wheel, but other than that, it was basically the same attraction. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much the same.
Okay, with the sliding death cars, and Malibumer's gone. Okay, now let's talk about the swings for a second, because Jeremy and I, it's just one of those little pleasures in life are those Silly Symphony swings.
Yeah, it's a cute, fun ride.
I like it, but what is with this orange mess that I'm looking at?
So, okay, it was inside a giant orange, and then they would spray orange scent in the ride. And then very, very early on, and I think this only lasted probably a month, the seats had like a bee butt and like a fake stinger on the back.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember something about bumblebees being a part of this, and I don't see that anywhere on this arena.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my word. It's like they had extra orange scent left over from soaring over California.
Yeah.
So they're like, we'll just pipe it in here randomly.
I'm convinced every Imagineer was drunk when they were coming up with this park, because who thinks that's a good idea? That's, yeah. Oh, wow. Hmm.
Can we circle back to the California Screamin' area real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, so there was two quick service restaurants where Toy Story is now. So there was Strips, Dips, and Chips, and Malaburritos.
That's right.
So,
oh, that's horrible. Yes. And yeah, I love it.
So these restaurants, like I mentioned earlier, how with Hollywood and Dine, how it was never open because the park was dead. These restaurants, at this point in my life, I was going to Disneyland constantly, probably more than I do now. And I never saw Strips, Dips, and Chips open outside of the cast member preview. So I never saw it open to the general public. And Malaburritos was only open on like very busy weekends. So just imagine that area before Toy Story Mania, and all they had was the carousel and then these two quick service restaurants that were never open.
Oh, my word. Well, that makes me think, was alcohol a part of this park from opening day?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There was alcohol everywhere.
I mean, it makes sense.
With a name like Malaburritos, so was Stoners. They were welcome as well.
Malaburritos. Oh, that's horrible. I mean, there are still puns around DCA today, but they're not nearly as extensive as they were.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, back over by the swings, those same attractions that are there today, like the Zephyr, the Golden Zephyr, and the Jumpin' Jellyfish, look like they were still there that opening year.
Yeah, nothing's changed on those at all.
Okay, so explain to me what the SS Rustworthy presented by McDonald's is.
That was a play area for little kids. You know, it's kind of like actually Donald's boat in Toontown, where there's just rope climbing and, you know, noisemakers and a little, like, I think there was a ball pit in there you could jump in. And yeah, it was just a little kid play area.
Okay. Well, McDonald's also sponsored Burger Invasion.
Oh, yeah. Another restaurant that was hardly ever open. Burger Invasion was a giant hamburger spaceship. I think the thing they were going for with this was like a California Kitsch roadside attraction thing.
Yeah, yeah.
With like a themed building. But I don't know. It just looked very cheap. And, you know, who wants to go to a Disney park and eat overpriced McDonald's food?
It's funny. I'm looking at the map now, and only now am I realizing that, yes, that is indeed shaped like a burger bun.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And right next door, I guess, was Pizza Mau Mau?
Yeah, Pizza Mau Mau, a favorite of my friend Tom Bricker, who told me to bring it up on this podcast.
It's described as surfboard-shaped pizzas with outrageous toppings.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a way to describe... Oh, you know what? Actually, it kind of looks like... the restaurant in Animal Kingdom, the dinosaur restaurant where there's like crazy crap all over the walls and
Restaurantosaurus.
Yeah, Restaurantosaurus. It kind of reminded me of that, except it was like surfer themed. So there was like a fake shark with a wetsuit hanging out of it and surfboards everywhere and
You
know, like a folding chair on the roof and stuff like that.
That works. There's no reason to get rid of that.
Well, it's still a pizza place. It's Boardwalk Pizza and Pasta now. But
oh, that's right. Okay, help me out with my California lingo. I guess I'm not up on it because I don't know what Mau Mau means.
I have never heard that outside of this term. I mean,
I
I'm
think
not
it's
a...
that song.
Oh, that Mau Mau.
Yeah.
Mau. That one? Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds
kind of
right.
A surfing song, isn't it?
Let's go with that, yeah.
Is it like Beach Boys or something?
No. I'm gonna look it up right now. Mau Mau song.
Okay.
Papa Mau Mau.
Oh.
1964 surf rockers Jan and Dean.
Well, there you go.
Okay. Well, that actually makes a little bit more sense now. Thank you.
No.
Outside
Sorry.
Of Pizza Mau Mau. Oh, okay. Outside of Pizza Mau Mau, they had several carnival games. So
you could sure.
Play those and win, you know, stupid stuffed animals.
Which they still have those carnival games over by Midway Mania, don't they?
Right, but at least those are like nicely themed.
Yeah, yeah. See, I actually really like Paradise Pier now. I mean, I still get that at its core, it's just a recreation of like a beachside amusement park. But visually, I love standing on the other side of the water, and especially at night, watching all those attractions go.
Let me ask a very important question.
Mm-hmm.
Is the theming in Paradise Pier so detailed as to have worn pavement and cracks?
Matt, he's referring to Chester and Hester's in Animal Kingdom, right, which Matt hates with a passion, just in case you didn't
know.
These
all sound very similar to me, and that my hatred might be leaking over into this area.
Right. You would hate this area, Matt. You really would.
Oh, it was really bad, especially the giant orange and SS Rustworthy and all that. It was awful.
I think Matt would hate it today because the next attraction we're getting to is basically Primeval World that does not spin.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's what I'm seeing here is Mulholland Madness, right?
Right.
Yeah. Sponsored by, I think it was Alamo Rent-A-Car. The outside was covered with a giant map, like a giant cartoonish map. So it just looked terrible. It was a total eyesore. I think it still is kind of an eyesore in a pretty nice area, but whatever.
Is it still there?
It's still there. It's just themed to Goofy Sky School now.
Oh, well, that's a little better.
And it's got actual Bill Farmer narration.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, not your type of ride, Matt. Sorry. Kind of the off the shelf. Well, I forget what the name of those generic coasters are, but that seats four and kind of jerks you.
Wild Mouse.
Yeah, that's it. So anyway, was there anything else in this?
Well, I guess the thing worth bringing up is the Sunglasses Shack, Dinosaur Jack Sunglasses Shack, I think it was called.
Okay, I'm seeing the dinosaur now on the map.
Yeah, it was kind of like Gertie from the studios, but a lot more cartoonish and just ugly and garish.
Hmm. Now, Corndog Castle, I'm also seeing that's still there.
Still there, yeah. Okay. It got a little bit nicer facade, though.
Okay. That's where I got my first ever Disney corndog. Was it nice. Corndog Castle, yeah.
Corndog Castle.
It's like royal. It's like royalty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Okay, and then as you come out of Paradise Pier, I'm curious, before we get to Golden Dreams, the area that is now standing room for World of Color, I see it on the map still. So what was it before they used it for World of Color?
It was just an open area. There was no trees there or anything.
All right.
They did have a couple of lagoon shows. So they had Illuminaria, and then they had the Illuminaria Christmas version a couple years after DCA opened. Those were not popular and didn't do anything to keep people in the parks.
Now that you say those, I definitely have heard stories about Illuminaria.
Yeah, so those didn't last long. They also had concerts on the bay. So they would make a giant stage like on top of the water, and then they would set up a bunch of folding chairs in that area so you could watch people like Chubby Checkers.
Okay.
I'm not making that up.
No, I believe you. There's nothing that we've talked about so far that would make me think you're making that up. Okay, but Golden Dreams, this is where I always forget. I always mix up the names of the attractions, but basically the Little Mermaid Dark Ride is
right
now.
Right. Ariel's Undersea Adventure.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Now, Golden Dreams was a movie?
Yeah, it was a movie starring Whoopi Goldberg. And so they would have the actual screen, and then off to the side was a statue of Khalifa, which is like a California goddess. I don't know. I'm bad with my mythological California history.
I only know Wiz Khalifa.
Right. So Whoopi's face would be like projection mapped onto these statues, and she would kind of like narrate along with the movie. But also Whoopi was in the movie in various parts of like California history. So, you know, when like people were mining for gold and other significant parts of California history. And this was another one. I keep going back to that Long Beach Press Telegram story of early DCA. This was one where they pitched it as a version of American Adventure from Epcot, but California. And then we just ended up getting a movie.
Okay. Anything with Whoopi Goldberg should not be compared to American Adventure.
Is she even from California?
This was back then where there was not going to be Whoopi Goldberg.
I see.
It's going to be okay. like a audio animatronic extravaganza stage show thing.
Oh, no.
But, you know, people in California, and no offense to you at all, but they have a reputation of being very, like, egocentric and thinking they're the only ones that matter. So putting an attraction in that's just about your history is kind of I mean, that I could see how that wouldn't sell to the other 49 states in the world for that mistake.
The 49 yeah, that states was, in the world. Yeah.
This is another one of those things like, who was this attraction for? Are
yeah.
Californians really going to want to see this? Are tourists going to want to see this? I don't know.
Wow. It didn't last long, so we know why.
It didn't last long, and I remember it closed, and then it just sat closed for, you know, a little bit, like a year or two. But they would open it for, like, student tour groups from local elementary schools and stuff, so they could watch it.
Okay, I'm going to get into some just general things. If there's something we forgot and you want to talk about, we'll just circle back. That's cool. But it's amazing, as we talk about this, that it's only been 15 years since all this was there, because the DCA I know is so very different from this, with just the gorgeous Carthay Circle Theater there at the end of Buena Vista Street, and Cars Land is just so immersive. And of course, like we said, the Tower of Terror is there now. It's just amazing to me that so much changed in so little time.
Yeah, and you know, it's back when this opened, we were coming off of Indiana Jones Adventure in 1995. And then I guess New Tomorrowland, which was a total turd. Maybe we should have been warned by
total turd.
The rocket rods.
Yeah. But yeah, we were coming off Indiana Jones Adventure. So you're thinking like, wow, this is what Disney can do, like when they actually like put their mind to it, and then DCA opens and this is what we get.
Okay, so what was attendance like in those first years?
So if you go by what all the newspapers were saying and what all the Disney fan sites were saying, attendance wasn't good, and they panicked and put in several stopgap things to try to stop the bleeding, such as the X Games experience, where they had where Cars Land they had a like a dirt track set up where you could watch, you know, motorbikes race around and do flips and stunts and stuff.
Literally, the only thing that could be worse than Lights, Motors, Action is what you just described.
I was just about to say, I think I speak for all of us when I say that sounds horrible.
Right. And then they, like I mentioned before, they tried the soap opera weekends. Mm-hmm. They tried Food and Wine for a couple years at DCA, which I don't know why they wouldn't try to bring that back. It that was kind of actually a fun thing, and there was a lot of good food everywhere.
If it's as popular as it is here in Disney World, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it was a good idea. And I saw that later that very year they brought in the Main Street Electrical Parade and called it Disney's Electrical Parade as sort of like a nighttime entertainment to bring guests in. Did that help at all?
Right. So in 1997, they retired the Electrical Parade from Disneyland. And then in, 2002, 2001?
The reports I saw were April of 2001, so that very year.
Okay, so 2001, they brought in the Electrical Parade to try to, again, help DCA. So here's the thing. I remember one time going into California Adventure, and this was back when DCA was completely dead at night. Like, once you would hit 5 or 6 o'clock, the park would just be empty, completely empty. I remember going into DCA and walking through Sunshine Plaza, and the Electrical Parade was going by, and there was literally no one standing around watching it. It was like, it was so eerie.
So obviously that plan did not work in getting people over from the other park.
No. There were plenty of room to watch the Electrical Parade if you wanted to. You did not have to arrive early for that, except for the last night. I remember on the last night they had it. That was the only time I ever saw people actually waiting for the parade.
Oh, that's a shame.
I guess it's worth mentioning the opening day parade that they had for like a year or so, the Eureka Parade.
Hmm.
So the thing that stands out in that is they had these two guys on stilts walking around that were dressed as the Golden Gate Bridge.
No.
I've seen pictures of that. Yes.
Yeah, that was on like postcards and everything. Wow. That was like one of those widely used publicity photos.
I may be making this up. Is Eureka one of the giant words on, like, in Grizzly River or in Grizzly Airfield as you're leaving Paradise Pier and you're heading towards the front? There's that giant building with like the water mill.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Does that say Eureka?
I don't know if it still says it. They repainted it a couple years ago.
Okay, never mind. Because when you said Eureka, I was like, why does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking at those Golden Gate men now. That is a mess. Oh my word.
In your opinion, what was the first major change that really improved DCA?
I guess it'd have to be Tower of Terror, because then it was, you know, an actual reason to go over there besides Soarin'.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Were there any sit-down restaurants in this park when it opened?
Yeah, there was Golden Vine Trattoria, and then there was the Wolfgang Puck Avalon Cove.
That's right.
Both which lost their sponsorship, like I said, but still opened up a little bit later once Disney went through and scrubbed all the names off. And then there was Soap Opera Bistro.
Were there any characters?
Yeah, so there was Mickey in like a vacation-y, like he was wearing cargo shorts and like a unbuttoned collared shirt and like a hat that said California Adventure on it.
Oh, no.
And then I remember Stitch and Lilo used to meet by Pizza on Mau Mau.
Oh, because surfing. I get that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there was any shortage of characters in the park.
Okay. I'm just wondering, because now Ariel's Grotto is obviously very character-centric, and then Monsters, Inc., the dark ride over there, has a lot to do with characters. But yeah, as far as attractions go, I'm not really seeing anything that screams Disney characters.
Yeah, there was no like structured meet and greets, really. They just kind of wandered around. Another thing the park lacked was like live entertainment. I don't really remember there being many like just little things here and there. Like, you know, you walk through Adventureland or whatever, or New Orleans Square, I guess, and you see like the Bootstrappers performing. There was nothing like that in DCA.
Huh. Yeah, because Buena Vista Street with the Trolley Boys or the Newsboys and Five and Dime, and I've seen videos of the bell ringers at Christmas time.
Oh yeah, so
like they've got it made right now. They're really doing
actually well. You know, since you bring that up, I guess it's good to bring up Halloween and Christmas in DCA.
okay.
So Christmas was again going with like the hip and edgy thing where it was like Santa's on vacation, so when you meet Santa, he's wearing swim trunks and sunglasses, and then there's like surf shacks with reindeer in it.
Oh, my word. That's not Santa. That's just like John Lasseter with the beard.
It was not the classy Christmas that they do over at Disneyland. And then for Halloween, they actually had the Halloween party, Mickey's Halloween party in DCA for the first, three or four years. Or I guess it started in Disneyland in the very early 90s and then went over to DCA for a while.
Was Candy Corn Acres part of it?
Yeah, yeah, Candy Corn Acres, yeah. So you'd walk in Sunshine Plaza and there'd be giant candy corn everywhere. And
yeah. I think they should still do that personally, but of course I never experienced it, but still, that park has, because we were there for Halloween the last 2 years in a row, and that park really doesn't do anything at all.
No, they don't do anything.
Like, not even decorations down Buena Vista Street or anything, but...
Is there anything from the opening day attractions that are no longer there that you would like to see come back?
I think everything that has been removed is better off in the history books.
I kind of got that feeling, but you know, I figured it's worth asking.
And yet at the same time, I wish we had a time machine, because just once I want to experience it like it was. I want to say I was there for DCA 1.0.
yeah. Well, but I will say this, back then, when if you went to Disneyland and it was too busy, you could go over to DCA and have no waits at all.
I believe it.
Most of the summer, even. So
you could probably ride Superstar Limo over and over and over.
I mean, the joke back then was that DCA was the annual pass holder lounge. Like, tourists didn't go there.
Yes.
California Adventure 1.0 could be summarized best by Lisa Simpson, who... I think within a year after the park opening, there was an episode of The Simpsons where they're in prison or they're touring a prison or something. I just remember Lisa saying, well, it sure beats Disney's California Adventure. I mean, it's like 2002. I remember that. It was within a year of the park opening.
That's awesome.
What was the reasoning, you may not know this, but behind dropping the apostrophe S on Disney?
You know, I don't know. I've heard a lot of theories on that. Like they didn't want to make it possessive.
It just seems like such a minor change.
Yeah, it's very strange. And then the rumor came out that they were gonna do that to all the Disney World properties, like the Disney World hotels and stuff. But nothing ever came of that.
Well, we still have Disney's Hollywood Studios out here, so.
Right. Yeah, that is a very strange theme, or strange change.
Yeah. Huh.
It feels like we left a lot out, but just like there was nothing in this park.
I'm starting to pick up on that.
Looking at the map, I definitely can see that as well. So, yeah.
How do you feel about it in its current state?
I think it's great. It's a nice place to visit, which at the very minimum is all you can ask for with a Disney theme park.
It's so true. It's so true. We spent probably barely less than half of our time in this park of the two, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot going for it now. But thank you so much for joining us. We probably could have done a little bit of research, but I know you filled in so many gaps that we never could have since you were there in those years. So
yeah, I got so excited when you asked me because I'm just like, oh, this is in my wheelhouse talking about DCA 1.0. I was there so much and it was so bad.
Do you have like old photo albums packed with pictures of this place?
I don't have photos. I have a bunch of just like ephemera and other junk.
Gotcha. But sometimes that's better to have anyway.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks again. We'll let you know next time we're out in California or next time we're talking about something that you can speak into, but we appreciate you helping us out on the show anyway.
So, yeah, thanks a lot.
Oh, hey, before you go, do you want to remind everybody where they can find you online?
Oh, yeah. At Guy Selga on Twitter, GUYSELGA, and then over on touringplans.com and The Unofficial Guide to Disneyland 2016 in Amazon and bookstores.
Hey, published writer.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Well, I think that does it for another episode of our podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, you can find us online on Twitter at Mad Chatters or on Facebook. You can always send your comments, questions, hate mail to comments@madchatters.net. We love hearing from you, and we will see you here next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
How about now?
That was fun. I liked that. I was really proud of my I'll make a manicotti out of you.
Yeah. Oh, I should have done a whole Nougat World, but that's okay. Oh, God help the Outback, because I didn't say that one. But
they need it. Shrinking portions and rising prices. God help the Outbacks.
You're right.